Hello, and welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans. I'm David Bailey, and over the past nearly 12 years, this podcast has taken on many forms, from interviews and audio diaries to cultural snapshots and expat reflections. You might notice some different podcast names mentioned along the way, but it's all part of the same journey, one that explores life, people, and stories from this fascinating region I now call home. If you're enjoying the listen, I'd love it if you left a quick review or rating wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps others discover the show. And if something in the episode sparks your interest or curiosity, why not drop me a message? I always enjoy hearing from listeners. I always reply.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans, the podcast that takes you on a captivating journey into the heart of Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. Each episode, we delve into the rich history, vibrant culture, and hidden gems of this beautiful country. Through engaging conversations and personal anecdotes, we aim to bridge the gap between the Balkans and the rest of the world. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired, entertained, and connected.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
It's An Englishman in the Balkans podcast. And today is a very, very special episode of the podcast because it's about something that I feel not many people know about, especially when it comes to Bosnia and Herzegovina. There's a lot of history involved in what we're going to be talking today. And sometimes when you research things online, you don't actually get the real answer. And I'm going to qualify what I've just said because, yeah, it depends on what you read. So the best person to tell a story about something is somebody that works with it all the time. Now, I'm joined today by Aleksandra Buncic. Right, Aleksandra is a scholar and an expert when it comes to one of the most rarest documents in the world. And that document resides in Sarajevo in Bosnia and Herzegovina. Alexandra's going to tell me anyway, but I think it's from 1392. I might have the date slightly wrong there. As normal, the question goes, to start the podcast, who is Aleksandra Buncic?
Thank you so much for the invitation and for the interest in this manuscript. And we did not reveal yet what we will be talking about and what is the manuscript in question. You said it correctly. It is housed at the National Museum of Bosnia and Herzegovina in Sarajevo. When it comes to me and the question who I am, I'm an art historian and a scholar. And I'm very passionate about the art, history, and the mysteries that are connected with this I dare to say, very important and significant manuscript.
Alexandra, what is the Sarajevo Haggadah? And why is it considered so significant?
So in general, the Haggadah is a book read on Pesach or Passover, that is a Jewish holiday commemorating the liberation of the Israelites from a 400 years captivity in Egypt, as described in the book of Exodus. Haggadot, which is a plural of Haggadah, emerged as a separate volumes at the beginning of 14th century, following the expansion and influence of Christian book production. The Sarajevo Haggadah belongs to a group of Iberian Haggadot, of which only 15 are known to survive. And you put it so correctly that it's a rare manuscript if we consider its historical, artistic, and cultural value. The Sarajevo Haggadah contains the most extensive cycle of illustrations depicting both the book of Genesis and the book of Exodus, which is to some extent unusual because the story of the Haggadah itself is connected with the events described in the book of Exodus. The Sarajevo Haggadah is significant not only because of the story that it contains, the biblical story that it illustrates, but also the history that it tells, and that is the journey from Spain, medieval Spain, where the manuscript was produced, to the Sarajevo, to the National Museum of Bosnia and Herzegovina.
So how did it actually end up in Sarajevo?
Well, that is the question that historians or art historians don't know the actuality or the precise list of the events that led the Sarajevo Haggadah to end up in the Sarajevo are, of course, not known. And we are seeking the scholarly ways and studies to give the possible options and arguments of how this could happen. So although we don't know the exact date or place of its productions, there are some clues within the manuscript that enable us to peek, so to speak, into its history. For example, we have a page, Halachmanya, which has three coats of arms, one of which is connected to the county of Barcelona. And of course, we have some other features, for example, the style and the art, how the certain figures are executed, that would put this Haggadah into a certain region within the medieval Spain, of course. We do know that the manuscript was produced around 1350s. As I said, don't know the exact date or time. We know that it is produced in Hebrew in medieval Catalonia, which is nowadays northern Spain. And we also have a clues about who might be able to commission such manuscript. Since back in the Middle Ages, book production was a very elaborate process, and only a wealthy persons could commission such richly illustrated manuscript.
It was due to a fact of watching a Turkish television series on Netflix called The Club. And it opened up to me the story of Jewish people who had left Spain during the Inquisition and arrived in Turkey, and that they spoke a very unique language called Ladino. At the same time, here in Banja Luka, at the Banja Luka Fest, a lady came to sing in Ladino. I then found out that there are three families in Banja Luka who are Sephardic Jews, and the grandfather used to speak Ladino. How many people came to what is now Bosnia and Herzegovina from Spain back in those days when the Haggadah was created?
Thank you for that question. It's actually an important one because we want to trace the journey of the Sarajevo Haggadah from medieval Spain to Sarajevo. And there are many bumps on the way, and we are trying as scholars to connect the dots along this journey. So we do know that first families arrived in Sarajevo around or at the beginning of the 16th century, and we have Ottoman records that mention some Sephardic families. However, we don't know, and it's plausible to claim that the Sarajevo Haggadah came with those families, because within the manuscript we have some other spots on this journey, including early modern Italy, where the manuscript was at the beginning of the 17th century. So there is a historical journey connecting three dots in the history of the Sarajevo Haggadah, first being medieval Spain, then the region of Italy, possibly around the cities of Modena or Venice, where the manuscript was censored by a Roman Catholic censor in 1609. So we have a confirmation within the pages of the manuscript itself that at that particular period, the manuscript was in Italy. And then from there, we have a gap. And at the 19th century, in the city records and also at the records of the National Museum of Bosnia and Herzegovina, we have a mention of the manuscript when a family member of Sephardic Cohen family sold the manuscript to the National Museum of Bosnia and Herzegovina. So this gap and how the manuscript reached from Italy to Sarajevo is something that we still explore and try to figure out the possible ways, one of which is that the unfavorable circumstances for Jewish communities in Italy back in the, let's say, around mid-19th century were circumstances that led owners of the Sarajevo Haggadah to move from northern Italy to Sarajevo and to settle here.
You're listening to an Englishman in the Balkans.
Hi, and dobrodošli. My name is Ivana, and I'm the heart and soul behind the Balkans East podcast, coming to you all the way from beautiful Australia. As a former refugee, I've walked the path of resilience and transformation. My mission, to empower Balkan women and men to heal, thrive, and grow through my coaching and mentoring programs. Join me on this incredible journey of self-discovery, community, and belonging. Together, we'll rewrite our stories and move forward towards a brighter future. Balkansis Podcast, your source of authentic stories, inspiration, and wisdom. Ready to make a difference? Dive in and follow us today.
So what makes the illustrations and the illuminations in the Sarajevo Haggadah unique?
So I believe that it's the visual interpretation of the certain biblical episodes that do not have any parallels in any form of art throughout the Middle Ages. For example, the first image in the creation cycle, illustrating the pre-creation moment, where the golden wavy lines represent God, or facelessness angels ascending and descending from heavens in the episode of Jacob's ladder. So the illuminator of the Sarajevo Haggadah had actually unique visual interpretation and understanding of the text of the Tanakh, and used this visual interpretation to transform into very unique, I would say, subtle visual language.
Bosnia and Herzegovina has had more than its fair share of crisis and chaos from before the Turkish Ottomans came. Then there was the time of the Austro-Hungarians, the First World War. Then the sad events of the Second World War. Sarajevo and Bosnia and Herzegovina is occupied by three different nations. And then more recently, the tragic inter-ethnic conflict, which Sarajevo really, really suffered under. So how has the Haggadah survived these historical challenges through wars and conflicts?
Thank you for that question. It's really important in addressing the circumstances and how, as people, we can safeguard and take care of our national artifacts or monuments that represent our mutual history. I would say that it's a genuine admiration and acknowledgement of the beauty and the importance of the Sarajevo Haggadah, a unique document that it's nowadays recognized by institutions around the world, including UNESCO, and also by a first nowadays also staff of the museum, who is for 130 years taking care not only on the Sarajevo Haggadah, but also on other artifacts that are of value for history of Bosnia and Herzegovina.
In my country, in my history, we learn through art as well. The last occupation of Britain was from the Normans, and the story of that Norman invasion is taught in all schools through the biotapestry. So this artwork is an amazing storytelling medium. What stories does the Haggadah tell us?
I would say, for example, there are some key themes or stories depicted in the Sarajevo Haggadah that we can resonate with today. There are two images or pages that I would like to bring your attention and attention of the listeners and people who will be watching the podcast. The first one is the within the part of the illuminations depicting Yom Ahad, or the first day of creation, as the Genesis story teaches us, when God separated lights from the darkness. And this depiction is almost 21st century abstract art, where you have a clear division of the two opposite poles, one depicting light on the right-hand side and the other executed in black, depicting the darkness on the left-hand side. So for me, this episode really represents the duality of life and teaches us to distinguish what is important and what is not important in our life. So to speak, what brings us the darkness and what brings us life or light into our lives. The other image that I would like to mention here is within the text of the Haggadah in the Codex itself, and it's a richly decorated ascending Hebrew letter Lamed, or L, that reminds us that we should give honor to the one who made all the miracles and took us from slavery to freedom, from servitude to redemption, from sorrow to happiness, from mourning to festivity, and from deep darkness to great light. Living in those unprecedented times, I believe that every individual can resonate with the messages that this quote brings.
It's a great storytelling document. And like other medieval documents as well, people are still trying to work out how it was actually put together. How did the craftsmen and artists use their skills to create something that lasted for hundreds and hundreds of years? What is your understanding with your project about how this medieval manuscript was produced?
So first of all, there are several things that are important to mention here. First, in the Middle Ages, the book production moved from scriptorias in monasteries to urban workshops. leading to expansion of the titles that were covered and also the titles that did not include only or exclusively secret texts, but also track thesis on astronomy, astrology, medicine, and so on. So, as I mentioned, manuscript production is a very elaborate process that involves several stages, from skin production, from preparing animals, slaughtering them, and preparing their skin for parchment. That is the first one. Then the outlining of the pages and how the manuscript will actually look like. And that stage also involves scribes and oftentimes illuminators. Sometimes that would be the same person, but oftentimes that would be two different people working on production of single volume. When I mention production process, I also have to mention that it's a very elaborate process, very expensive process back in the Middle Ages, and producing a single volume could take up for a year. And it would, as I mentioned, involve several individuals working together, including scribe, illuminator, oftentimes a religious advisor and commissioner who would express his wishes on how he wants the manuscript to look like. It is also important to mention that back in the Middle Ages, Jews were not allowed to be members of guilds. So we do have some understanding that Jewish scribes and Christian illuminators worked together in the production of Jewish illuminated manuscripts, but we do lack knowledge about where those manuscripts were and how the process itself was developing and was followed by. Nowadays, it's very important to mention modern technology that enables us to study medieval manuscripts, including Jewish illuminated manuscripts, in ways that were not possible before. And some of those methodologies and technologies are non-invasive technologies, which means that minimum damage would be made to the manuscript or to the certain artifact by exploring its features that now we can study, for example, inks. We can study the production process, how the manuscript was gathered in the medieval book workshop, and also the different animals that were used for the production of the parchment. For example, in the project that I'm lead scholar to it, nowadays we are able to distinguish different species that are used for the production of certain folios or pages, parchment leaves within the Sarajevo Haggadah.
Veliki pozdrav svima, ko god da nas sluša bilo gdje u svijetu. Volim vas sve, šaljem mnogo ljubavi, poljubaca i pozdrava. Pratite Ultra magazin ultra.ba ili ga potražite na TikToku, Instagramu ili Facebooku. Ja sam tu također za sve vas. Možemo se družiti, možemo sarađivati. Potražite me na Instagramu Dijana Tepšić.
You're listening to an Englishman in the Balkans.
Back when the Jewish people were expelled from Spain as a result of the Inquisition. The Roman Catholic faith at the time was the dominant Christian faith. There hadn't been any protests. There hadn't been any Protestants at that time. And so they have expelled the Jewish community from Spain. And yet you've said that there is this multi-faith component to the Haggadah with Jewish scribes and Christian artists doing the artwork, as it were. How did that happen? How was that allowed to happen?
Well, that's a very tricky question. And as I mentioned, we don't have enough information. We do have more of the information about the encounter between Christian illuminators and Jewish scribes happened in the group of Haggadot that are connected with the central European region, that means Ashkenazi Haggadot. We do not have, unfortunately, enough information about the workshops in medieval Spain and how this encounter happened. However, we do not know, we know that those encounters happened on multiple fields, including art, but also on the marketplace, with very strict regulations how one another faith could communicate and do their business.
I know that the Jewish community shrank for various reasons, which we all know about historically since the Second World War. But the small Jewish community now in Bosnia and Herzegovina, what is their relationship to the Haggadah?
So I think that, generally speaking, not only for the Jewish community of Sarajevo, but I will mention that in the moment as well, but generally to Jewish communities around the world, the Sarajevo Haggadah is a manuscript, I dare to say, we make pilgrimage to. And it serves us as a mirror that reflects both the times of prosperity and times of darkness. It is a witness to different circumstances, challenges, and changes that happened to Jewish communities back in medieval Catalonia, as I mentioned, and also in early modern Italy. The Sarajevo Haggadah also reflects the life of Bosnian Sephardic community and, if you will, of Jewish community nowadays. But to some extent, the manuscript itself locks its historical, religious, and cultural value within its pages. And although the Sarajevo Haggadah is now in different setting, which is museum setting as an artifact, and not in the family home to be read during the Pesach, during the holiday, its didactic purpose remained almost the same, and that is to teach us and to transmit the story of the Exodus to the future generations. Dor vador, as the text of the Haggadah mentions, from generation to generation, as we are obliged to tell the story of the Exodus and salvation from the slavery in Egypt every single Pesach. My hope is that the Sarajevo Haggadah will outlive us all and that we are here to share the story and its uniqueness with the world.
A lot of seriously important religious documents, books, etc., are now held in museums. But on certain occasions, they are removed from the museum and used as a reference for maybe a ceremony or something of great importance. Does the Haggadah still get removed from its resting place in the museum for use in any Jewish celebrations?
I have to say that nowadays not. The Haggadah is on display at the museum twice a week during Tuesdays and Thursdays from noon to 1 o'clock. And it is pulled away only for the scholarly analysis, not for religious purposes. However, I know, although I was very small back then during the war, that the Sarajevo Haggadah was removed from the museum to serve as Haggadah with this purpose that it has and for purpose that it was produced during Pesach celebration in the war, in the recent Bosnian war.
Alexander, how can people, you said it's open for viewing at certain times during the week. And I think it's very important that people that visit Bosnia-Herzegovina, that visit Sarajevo, should see this.
As a scholar, do you think there's going to be the possibility for people to see it for longer periods of time where it could be open to the public? Or is it kept away for not only security, but the way that the environment treats manuscripts these days?
Yes, it's a very important question, and it adds to the value of the manuscript and also sharing the story of the Sarajevo Haggadah with the world and with the visitors, not only to the National Museum of Bosnia and Herzegovina, but around the world. And this podcast is one of the ways of sharing these stories, the story. However, as I mentioned, the Sarajevo Haggadah is open for public twice a week, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I believe first Saturday in the month from noon to 1 o'clock, when visitors are invited to admire its beauty and the history that it tells. And there are also some other ways that people can learn about the Sarajevo Haggadah, including this podcast and also some other information, including the information from the national official website of the National Museum of Bosnia and Herzegovina, and also the official web page of the UNESCO Memory of the World Heritage List.
I think it's an absolutely fascinating thing that more people should know about. It certainly is part of the history of Bosnia and Herzegovina pre-Turkish occupation. And for me, that is the most unusual part of the history of the country, because it seems that everything for a foreigner, for a tourist, starts when the Turks arrive. But the country has so much more in the way of stories and history before that.
Yes, I agree, but I just want to correct you in the terms of when the Haggadah came to Sarajevo, and that is definitely after the Turkish occupation or the Ottoman occupation. So the first records that we have of the Sarajevo Haggadah, although, as I mentioned, we don't know the exact time or who brought the manuscript, we know that it came, or the first record shows around the end of 19th century, to be precise, 1894. We have a first mention in the official documents of the Austro-Hungarian Empire that there is this manuscript, and the family member of Cohen family wants to sell it to the newly established National Museum of Bosnia and Herzegovina. So although it is nowadays part of Bosnian and Herzegovinian cultural heritage, the manuscript was produced back in medieval Spain, and it was brought to the Sarajevo, to Bosnia and Herzegovina, which was back then ruled by Austro-Hungarian Empire.
How many people in the Jewish community that still remains in Sarajevo, and maybe the one or two, three people that live outside in rural Bosnia-Herzegovina. Alexandra, how many people still speak Ladino?
Well, it's unfortunately that, unfortunately not many. And I would say that people rather sing in Ladino than speak in Ladino. There are some attempts, not only within Jewish community of Bosnia and Herzegovina, but around the university, but at the universities around the world, to preserve the language and to bring new speakers that are able to speak and communicate in Ladino. Some of the initiatives are connected with the University of Washington, and also there is the language project that enforces the investigation of the Ladino language and its preservation. 2 years or 3 years back, I believe it was pandemic, last person speaking Ladino language passed away. And I would recommend, highly recommend, a documentary based on Alterat, Morris Alterat individual and a movie that describes his life and also portrays well the importance of preservation of Ladino language within the Jewish community, but as I mentioned, also in a world setting.
Finally, Alexandra, as a scholar and an expert who is so passionately involved with this project, what would you like to see as the end result of all your work? Is it a museum that is built around the Haggadah as its own subject? Do you think it should stay in a national museum? What would you like to see the final result for the Haggadah for people in the world to know about it?
Well, as a scholar, we also always try to escape the finality of the things, leaving the place for future discoveries and a study of this important manuscript. So what I hope and believe that will happen is that the more scholars and people around the world will recognize its value, and they will unite to help the National Museum of Bosnia and Herzegovina to preserve not only the Haggadah, but also other artifacts that are of equal importance and that stand along proudly, I would say, with the Sarajevo Haggadah.
For people that are watching or listening to this and have been enthused by it, what can they do to find out more for their own education, for their own satisfaction?
First of all, they can visit the National Museum of Bosnia and Herzegovina. And as you mentioned, this is the purpose of promoting or inviting people to visit Bosnia and Herzegovina. So I encourage those who are able to travel to visit the National Museum and to see the Haggadah in its showcase in the room, and to listen the curators explaining more about its cultural and religious significance. The second thing is people can visit the official page of the National Museum and read a little bit more about the manuscript, also involving the official record of the UNESCO heritage list where the Sarajevo Haggadah is inscribed as a unique monument to the humankind. They can, of course, listen to this podcast and read more about the Sarajevo Haggadah in different venues. So you would have a scholarly venue that describes the art and history of the manuscript and provides important or unique insights into depictions or images illustrating biblical events or history in Italy and so on. Then you have venues that are artworks that are inspired by the Sarajevo Haggadah but are not necessarily have the foundation or the history of the Sarajevo Haggadah in their core. For example, there is a music play inspired by the Sarajevo Haggadah and also a fiction book inspired by the Sarajevo Haggadah. So there are plenty of options, and nowadays that we live in virtual world, we can easily use Google and search for the options that we are interested in.
Alexandra, thank you so, so much for giving me your time today. I'm thoroughly intrigued now. For the next time that I go to Sarajevo, I've got to be there on that day between midday and one to go and see it. And with a bit of luck, Tamara and I can catch up with you for a coffee and find out a lot more. Alexandra Buncic from the Haggadah Project in Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina. Thank you very, very much for an exceedingly exciting podcast.
Thank you so much for your time and your interest in sharing the Sarajevo Haggadah story and the positive stories from Bosnia and Herzegovina.
And that's a wrap for this podcast. We hope you've enjoyed finding out a little more about both Bosnia and Herzegovina and the wider Western Balkans. If you've enjoyed this journey as much as we enjoy bringing it to you, please take a moment to leave us a review and subscribe to our podcast. Your feedback helps us tremendously and makes a huge difference. Thank you once again for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. If you would like to support us and the production of future episodes, then please consider maybe giving us a tip or becoming a member of our podcast family. The link to do that is in the show notes for this podcast. Thanks again for listening. We really do appreciate it.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
Welcome to An Englishman in the Balkans podcast with me, David Pacinovic Bailey. In this podcast, you'll get a unique look at life in Bosnia and Herzegovina through my eyes, the eyes of an immigrant. Each episode, I share my experiences living in this often misunderstood country and introduce you to some of the interesting people I've met along the way. From exploring the rich culture and history to discussing the challenges and joys of immigrating to a new country, this podcast offers a thoughtful and engaging look at life in the Western Balkans. So that's it for this one. Thanks for keeping me company. If you enjoyed the episode, maybe share it with a friend who might like it too. And if you've got thoughts, questions, or just want to say hello, you can always reach out. Also, if you'd like to support the podcast and help me keep telling these stories, you can drop a little tip via Buy Me a Coffee. The link is in the show notes. Even a euro or two makes a big difference. So that's it then. Take care, and I'll catch you in the next episode.